reflections on the water, more than darkness in the depth.
Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are, this is Eric.
And by the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex. Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is true.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen. And not a one of you is prepared for it.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road and, you know, anyway.
Other girls, they gather around him. If I had him, I wouldn't let him out. Golden eye, not lace or leather. Golden chain.
Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
This is Drew. And we have been longing to talk about Golden Eye. We have finally entered the Pierce Brosnan, James Bond era, and it's come none too soon.
I'm so excited about this.
I know, I think all of us have been eagerly awaiting GoldenEye because we remembered it fondly individually. So, did it live up to our expectations, Brother Jay?
So, I will say that this is, so far, without having rewatched the other Brosnan Bonds, this is one of my favorite Brosnan Bonds. I do have a special affection for The World Is Not Enough, so I will reserve judgment going forward. But right now, I was pleasantly surprised on rewatch with this movie. I thought it was cute and fun, and I enjoyed it. Also, because it's the whole Remington Steele, nay, Bond, so... Yay, Pierce Brosnan. Also, this movie had a great cast.
It did. Surprising cast.
And the introduction of Dame Judi Dench.
Indeed. Drew, what did you think about this?
I was very, very pleasantly surprised that it held up. It's a little dated, but I still enjoyed it quite a bit. I think just... mostly because of my age and because of my fondness for Remington Steele. While it was on, that was certainly like my favorite show on TV. Granted, that was back in the Stone Age when there was only like 3 to 4 options for channels. But I loved that show and I was really excited. I didn't really care about the Bond movies too much until this one. And that was because of Pierce Brosnan. So this is really like... my Bond when I think of James, the different James Bonds. So GoldenEye was the first one I saw in the theater, I think. And it was when I was in college. So I liked it quite a bit back then. And I've only seen it maybe one time since then. So I was nervous that it wouldn't hold up. And I've been waiting for it for a long time. And... I really liked it. It wasn't quite what I remembered, but it was very enjoyable, and it did some stuff that I really liked.
Yeah, I really liked it too. I think I don't think it holds up underneath like serious scrutiny, because the plot is sort of lame. I don't know. I guess I'll cut to the chase here. Pierce Brosnan, I think, is a great action Bond and not my favorite just walking around Bond.
Yeah, that really struck me. This is like the first almost 80s action movie Bond.
And it's got some fun, good, straight up practical stunts.
It's got some good one-liners, too.
Yeah, some of them are a little reaching.
But do you think the walking around Bond you were less fond of because of this was just kind of inadequate writing and yes. They weren't used to writing quality Bond because they came off of the campy Moore Bond?
Well, I think this was written for Timothy Dalton in mind. So it was written actually for a darker Bond, but it had a little bit more of a lighthearted feel to it. So I think that maybe there's a clash in tones a little bit. But it was fine. Maybe it's just my personal preference. Like, and also, you know, Bond is kind of a jerk. So
yeah, you know. I wrote that he was a petulant, spoiled brat in the beginning of this movie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's not a very pleasant guy. I mean, part of what Remington Steele was fun with was that you were sort of playing with that whole like archetype.
Also, he was very suave and debonair as the Remington Steele. He was charming in kind of a disarming way.
Yeah.
And this, he's just kind of a arrogant prick.
Yeah. But still, he's got plenty. I mean, his presence is fine.
Yeah, he had like a darkness and a weariness to this performance that surprised me. Like he didn't seem like he was having fun. The character, Bond, he didn't seem like he was having fun with this lifestyle.
Yeah, like Roger Moore was having fun.
Yeah, but he recognized he was still supposed to act like he was.
I mean, I think, you know, Roger Moore always looked like James Bond was having fun. And Sean Connery looked like being Bond was a good time.
So this is more of the working Bond versus the Playboy Bond.
Yeah, kind of. This example of it. Yeah. I mean, he could wear a suit.
And with all the action, it sort of seemed to flip the priorities. You know, the previous Bond seemed to be like all spycraft and cleverness and then action when he had to, and he was good at it. But this one seemed more like Bond was more like a commando, like a special forces operative who also would do spycraft if he needed to.
Yeah, I mean, to me, the what I was mentioning about the plot being a little weak was that, I mean, because, you know, James Bond plots are all over the place. I mean, it's supposed to be sort of a fantastic universe, but it seemed like in this story, it was all about Commando Bond, and he kind of went from place to place, but it wasn't until you absolutely needed an explanation for something that they shoehorned something in. Like, I don't know about you, but I didn't realize what the whole idea behind GoldenEye, like what the goal of the bad guy was until the very end, and then it was just like shoved in there.
It was obtuse, if not outright obscured, until then they were like, oh, we're going to rob a bank.
Yeah, exactly.
And we're going to destroy the world so that nobody finds out.
It was over MacGuffined.
Yeah. It was also the plot of Fight Club. Right? At the very end, wasn't that Jack's goal? More or less.
It was not Jack's goal. That was Tyler's goal.
Ah, okay. And so the bad guys in this movie weren't trying to destroy the banking system for its own benefit, but to cover the tracks of them stealing from the banking system. Oh, and by the way, to punish the English, the Brits.
It's almost Sneakers-like.
Yeah. And also this World War II stuff seemed a little heavy-handed.
Yeah, they weren't letting Britain get away with that.
Yeah. So, but what do you think about we'll go through the plot a little bit in the stunts. I guess we should do it late in our traditional manner. So, we've got the cold open, which includes the stunt off the dam, the bungee jumping stunt.
Yeah.
Just fun to watch.
Yeah, and it gives us that throwback to the old Cold War Russia.
Yep.
The most impossible free fall into a plane ever.
Well, yeah, we see Bond break into a Russian chemical plant in Czechoslovakia or something. And he and Agent 006, Sean Bean, are going to destroy this chemical plant. And they get interrupted, and there's some fun action. And then 006 gets shot in the head and killed. And Bond has to do this dance with a bunch of, like, beer kegs.
That's kind of brilliant.
Were you the one that told me about the meme that Sean Bean dies in every role?
I don't think so, but I know there's a supercut online of every time Sean Bean dies. Which, by the way, I think it was a spoiler in the opening credits to see Sean Bean's name right up front when he gets killed in the cold open.
That, why is that a spoiler?
Well, perhaps he's going to be coming back in the movie. Maybe he's not real dead.
Yeah, I don't know how big a star Sean Bean was at the time. Like, I don't have that history.
You don't think you would have recognized him as Sean Bean at the time?
No, I didn't.
Well, there's a...
That didn't even occur to me.
So there's like a valley where I think it would be a spoiler.
Uncanny valley?
Yeah, like if he was like super famous, like Ned Stark famous, he could still have top billing and die in the cold open. Because then it'd be like a shock, right? And then if he's unknown, he could be, you know, high billing and die in the cold open and nobody would care. But it's sort of that in between where you're right. It could be a spoiler because he's not big enough for it to have a big impact, his death. And it wouldn't make sense that he would have such top billing.
So, Brother E, do you remember what movie that we saw him die at the end of that we reviewed?
I do.
Hold on. No, I don't remember it. To answer your question directly, no.
Harrison Ford?
Patriot Games?
Yep.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
That may be the first movie I remember seeing Sean Bean in.
I think that's the first movie I saw him in. I'm looking at his IMDb page, and he's got a crap. He works a lot. He is a busy dude. He's got a movie in post-production right now, a TV series called Broken, Drone, which is finished, the Frankenstein Chronicles TV series, Roman Empire Reign of Blood TV series, 2016, Level Up Norge, 2016, Wasted TV series, 2016, Legends TV series, 2015, and then The Martian, 2015. Look at his IMDb page.
But he works a lot, which means he ends up in films like Pixels and Jupiter Ascending.
Yeah, but still.
But yeah, no, good for him. And he was a good Bond villain.
Have you seen either of those movies?
No. So you're saying I should not judge them unfairly?
Jupiter Ascending seems like it might have some potential.
Ah, okay. Well, maybe we should add it to the calendar.
That's not what I'm saying.
Oh, okay.
Not what I'm saying.
Okay. So we have we get to meet James Bond, the new James Bond. And we get to see the 006 get killed. And then we get to see a great, you know, another piece of gigantic Bond set piece action where he takes the motorcycle and chases down the plane. So in short order, before the opening credits, he does like two free fall dives off of like high things.
He's a bit of an overachiever, this Bond.
Yeah.
And it was a pretty dark opening.
Yeah.
I mean, the mission failed, right? It failed.
Oh, no.
And
no.
I wrote that 006 is straight out killing Russian people without any hesitation. Like, oh, yeah. He's murdering people within the first 2 minutes of the movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah. This is actually, I think, the highest head count for Bond.
And not preemptively murdering them, like murdering them as just a course of getting furthering their mission. This is kind of atypical Bond. Granted, he's not Bond. He's 006, but
well,
still.
He's got a license to kill. He's not going to let it sit around and gather dust.
Yeah.
But, yes, and, you know, I mean, so I don't know. Did his mission fail, or did he just lose somebody during the course of his mission? Because I think they blew up the plant, right?
That was a success. Yeah, they blew up the plant.
Yeah.
It wasn't as covert, I think, as it was intended.
And then we get the opening credit scene. What do you think about this opening credit scene? First of all, not the music, just the visuals.
It was cringe-inducing in parts. The big gun out of the mouth was really kind of...
They were trying to do so much. They wanted to make this what would become like Casino Royale or Skyfall. I don't actually remember enough of Quantum of Solace opening...
That was just shit.
Other than the song.
Shit. The song.
But
shit.
I remembered Casino Royale and Skyfall, the opening animated sequences being fantastic.
Casino Royale was fantastic. Absolutely. Skyfall was really good, too, for opening.
Yeah. But, yeah, I thought it was a little heavy-handed and weird imagery. I mean, no, it's not any weirder than the last bunch of James Bond things where you have girls bouncing on trampolines for no reason and that kind of thing. So, but it seemed like they were trying to transition from just the bouncing on trampoline into being a little bit more like symbolic, because they had like the Janus thing. But yeah, the gun poking out of her mouth was ridiculous and a little bit ooky.
Yeah, and it was kind of symbolic. I mean, there were parts of the animation where it was symbolizing the fall of the Russian Empire. So, the fall of the Soviet Union, as it were. So there was some symbolism, but it was pretty ham-handed as far as I'm concerned. It wasn't very subtle,
no.
which is fine. But I think at the time this movie came out, it would have... I think it had a greater impact then, but I think as it's aged, it has not aged well.
Yeah, it's one of the things that I think is the most dated about the movie. I don't think it landed. I know you didn't want to talk about the music yet, but you know that combined with the song, which I thought was okay, but ultimately pretty forgettable.
I hated the song. No. I was shocked about how much I hated that song. It's not the worst music in the movie, but it is not good.
It's not the worst Bond song, though.
No, not at all.
Yeah, I didn't hate it, but yeah, it wasn't great.
Yeah, it was very it was just so vanilla, like imitation vanilla.
It was worse than the Aha James Bond song.
Of course, it was.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
I still vote for Duran Duran.
I was going to say Duran Duran, actually, although I still think Wings.
Yeah, that probably so far, those are my top two.
But then we're 9 years later. It's kind of a big jump in the timeline here where God knows what's happened. But we end up with Bond driving down a twisty road. With a psychiatrist?
Yes, a therapist of some kind.
An evaluator.
Yeah. And all of a sudden, Bond, who is, I mean, in 2017 terms, he would be fired just for the way that he talked to this evaluator.
Yeah.
Although I did kind of like the bad line. So the therapist or evaluator's name for her psychological evaluation of Bond, whether she certifies him fit for duty or not, she's riding in the passenger seat of his, what is it, Aston Martin?
Aston Martin.
And he's screaming down this windy road, and she says, "I enjoy a spirited ride as much as the next girl, but..." And then all of a sudden the Ferrari pulls up alongside and smiles at the driver, played by... Famke Janssen, or depending on which interview you see, Famke Janssen, that's how Chris Hardwick says it. She pulls up and smiles at Bond, and Caroline says,
"I enjoy a spirited ride as much as the next girl." Who's that?
The next girl.
Because he's already making a play, right, for Caroline, and he's perhaps. Also he's also making a, you know, he's like, oh yeah, so maybe he's playing the game on her. Maybe he's negging her.
No, but I was all in. I was all in on Pierce Brosnan Bond just from this scene, because it was silly, but still, he was dark. You know, he seemed rather. Joyless, like he was going through the motions of seducing his evaluator, because that's what James Bond is supposed to do, but there's something going on underneath. That's how I read the scene.
And what do we think about Xenia on a top?
She was a little over the top.
I thought she was fun. Yes, over the top, but fun.
Yeah.
Meh. She was not the best villainess, not the worst.
Well, my favorite Bond girl in this movie is, of course, Minnie Driver.
Of course. Stand by your man.
Yeah. So he's great.
Okay. Brother Jay doesn't like Minnie Driver singing.
Oh, I like Minnie Driver. It was a throwback to the
Gross Point Blank.
But no, it was a throwback.
We never talked about Gross Point Blank, did we?
I don't think we did we?
I took notes. I know I have a whole bunch of notes.
I've got a bunch of notes too. We should definitely put that on the list because I've got I think two sets of notes on Gross Point Blank.
Yeah.
Which is a great. Are you sure we didn't talk about
it? We talked about it. Did we? It's an episode.
Okay, Gross Point Blank is episode number. This is how many podcasts we've done. We should be proud of ourselves that we can't remember the movies that we released.
But no, it was a reminder to the Dalton Bond where the Roadhouse scene stolen in.
Yes.
It had that kind of same feel to me. No, I like Minnie Driver quite a bit. And one of my favorite Minnie Driver films is the Minnie Driver Alan Cumming film, which I think was Circle of Friends.
That was her first big break, right?
Yeah. I thought that was a good movie.
Yeah, I don't think I ever saw it, but I've never.
It's probably less in your wheelhouse than more in my wheelhouse. So.
Yeah, well.
Gross Point Blank was episode 186.
Sweet.
Not that far back.
It was in between Octopussy and The Number Station.
Ah, excellent.
Oh, no, sorry. It was in between Octopussy and Network.
Ah.
And The Number Station was shortly thereafter?
Yeah. It was right after Network. And then we did Sicario. Yeah.
That's a good run of movies, actually.
Yeah.
It was.
Brother Drew, did you see The Number Station?
Nope, but I enjoyed the episode.
So what do you think of Robbie Coltrane? Because I really dig him.
Oh, I dig him too. I had forgotten he was in this.
Also, I loved everybody's Teddy KGB version Russian accents.
Yes, exactly. That's how I felt. Alan Cummings had the best Russian accent.
I am invincible.
He has never been more Alan Cummings than in this movie.
That's true.
Although, I don't know. He's pretty Alan Cummings most of the time. Which he I like. Is. I'm a big fan.
His autobiography is actually quite good.
Is it dark?
Does he talk about X-Men 2 in it?
I don't think so.
He played Banff, right?
Nightcrawler?
Yeah.
But if you get it on Audible... He reads it himself, so.
Wait, was he in X-Men 2 with Famke Janssen?
Yes, he was.
Excellent. So, let's just, can I... So, I know electromagnetic pulses was a big deal in 1995. By the way, I enjoyed the Baccarat scene.
I didn't get enough I wrote down specifically just that. You'd be so thrilled that it was very bad.
Can you please give us a refresher on the rules of Baccarat?
Please do.
I cannot. I believe it's something to do with the number 9, and it's got a paddle. So, yeah. Let's see. So, things that were things in 1995. Let's see. We had the electromagnetic pulse being somehow in the zeitgeist. And so the idea is the GoldenEye satellite has some sort of atomic bomb that blows up, creating an electromagnetic pulse, which then disrupts all the electronics in one specific area and blows up the satellite also. Luckily, there were two of them, right?
What I got out of it was blah, 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 bad guy laser.
Yeah. Well, again, weird.
Again, it was pretty MacGuffin.
A single use laser. because they were surprised there was another one of those things.
No, I thought there was another station to operate it, because the one they blew up was like the GoldenEye control station.
Okay, all right. So it was the control station that there were two of, surprisingly, not satellites.
Right.
That's what I gathered.
Okay. Well. And then we have, of course, the Tiger helicopter, which is impervious to electromagnetic pulses. Mm-hmm. Which, yep. like a lot of Bond gadget things, seems to be a very specific feature that only works in the situation that happens in the plot of this movie. It would be like if it had an internal shark cage, just so that Bond can later be in the water and fight off sharks. It's fine. Again, it's we're used to that in these Bond movies. I can't be too critical because it's no weirder than we've seen in any other Bond movie.
And it has the most sexual method of murder by a Bond villain since Jaws.
It's the pelvic thrust that really drives you insane. No, she is full-on orgasming every time she kills somebody, be it by machine gun or crushing it with her thighs.
Yeah, or even sees somebody dying.
Yeah, she's in it to win it. So, yeah, and so that was over the top, but sort of fun. I think she played it really well.
I think she played it a little over the top.
Too much?
On a top?
Yeah, yeah, there you go.
But
was there something about her first name that should have been interesting?
I don't think so.
I didn't get it.
We're ugly Americans. Who knows?
Yeah, so if there was some sort of pun there, I didn't get it.
Maybe it's a British thing. Maybe Dougie can tell us.
There you go.
Dougie, if you're listening to this, enlighten us ugly Americans, please.
Maybe it's a Russian thing.
Possibly.
Yes.
Do we have any Russian listeners? We must have.
We have a couple Russian downloads here and there. I don't think we have a subscriber. Hmm. Although, let us know. Send us feedback.
Пожалуйста.
To Onatop at Not in a Creepy Way. So we have Xeni Onatop, who crushes people with her killer thighs or vagina or whatever it is. And
Octopuswa.
Yeah. And then we have in Siberia, we have the satellite communications outpost where we meet, among other people. Well, we meet the general, Oryamov, who, by the way, was the general that killed 006 in that chemical plant 9 years earlier. But he is now some sort of sinister guy and comes in with Xenia Onatop into the station. And we see some computer programmers in the background, including Boris, played by Alan Cummings, way over the top. Like, if they let Alan Cummings play this much with his character, Famke Janssen is like, oh yeah, I've got a full playing field. And then we have the very, how would you describe her? Natalia was sort of cold, except for when she was sleeping with Bond, in which case she seemed to be having the time of her life. But for most of the movie, she's strong but cold. Maybe it's too much of a Russian stereotype, I don't know. But we have full-scale murder here. We got everybody being murdered in this place. And we had some pretty, like, big scenes. Like, Natalia, for a character who, again, is kind of flat, as far as I was concerned, she climbs out of a lot of dangerous situations and avoids being blown up several times.
Yeah, she's not the typical helpless Bond bimbo. She's a pretty surprisingly strong character.
Yeah, yeah. Between she and Xenia, we had strong women, so that's good.
Yeah,
I liked her, except it didn't make any sense when she just all of a sudden showed up in a bikini.
Well, or as the James Bonding guy said, you know, when Sean Bean, like, rape kisses her on the train, and then a couple minutes later, James Bond basically rape kisses her, that's a totally different reaction between the two.
Well, one is handsome and one has a half-melted face.
Ah, that's it. Yeah, and where did we get the Darth Vader train? Was that necessary? It's a 2-hour and 10-minute movie. Come on.
That was supposed to be the big and scary stealth train. Because that, you know, stealth was big then.
Yeah, well, we get the Darth Vader. Wait, it's a train. How can it be stealth? It rides on tracks.
I didn't say it made sense. I'm just saying.
Stealth train doesn't seem like... yeah, it'd be like ninja trolley. But
ice.
Yeah, and then we have the... and I know I'm skipping around a little bit. But we had a perfectly enjoyable tank chase.
I love the tank. I loved everything about the tank.
It was hilarious.
I love the stupid statue on top of the tank.
Yes. I love the fact that he had to... he drove the tank while standing up to have full view of James Bond for most of the time. Like, every time he had the opportunity, that stuff wasn't actually literally bricks falling on him. He was up there looking like James Bond.
And he was amazing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And he killed the Darth Vader train with the tank. That's some heavy ice.
It really is.
But along the way, we meet the Felix Leiter of this movie, Jack Wade, played by Joe Don Baker. Because we couldn't
also
get enough of
him. Former Bond villain, right?
Yes. A ridiculous Bond villain, who, by the way, I think he worked really well as the crass American CIA guy. Much better than he did the crazy American arms dealer guy.
But they're the same person.
Oh, yeah, totally. 100%. He had better clothes. And we meet Robbie Coltrane. He is a Russian gangster who has already met Bond in the past. Bond shot him and caused him to walk with a limp. Oh, and also stole his woman.
So they couldn't get any Russians to play the Russian parts?
No.
Well, yeah. If you hire a Russian, their accent is going to sound ridiculous.
Compared to Alan Cummings?
That's right. And Xenia on a top.
Yes.
Oh, and once again, the pleasure was all yours.
No, it's Mini Driver singing "Stand by Your Man, Moose and Squirrel."
Yeah,
it was so painful. It was supposed to be painful, though.
Yeah, I think so. It's campy.
Yeah.
It did make me want to watch Good Will Hunting again, though.
Oh, absolutely. And then we learn about the Lyons Cossacks, who we heard about a lot. Became a major point.
I think that's going to come up.
That it irritated me.
I didn't even know it was a thing.
I still don't know if it's a thing.
it has to be.
You'd think so, but I don't know. They made up a bunch of stuff for this movie. But yeah, then we see Bond and Xenia in the steam room. Which at first I was thinking, oh, maybe this is like almost an Eastern Promises steam room kind of thing. It could be fun and action-packed. And it was fun and action-packed, but not in quite that same way. Not as brutal as Eastern Promises. And Famke Janssen said she broke a rib being slammed against the wall.
Oh, well, maybe she shouldn't have bit him so hard.
No, at her insistence, he slammed her against the wall.
That's enough foreplay.
Yeah. So Bond ends up... Yeah. You know, it's funny because, yeah, Xenia is way over the top. But Bond basically disables her, like, several times in... throws her butt on the hot coals. Mm-hmm. And he also karate chops her into unconsciousness.
James Kirk style. I love it.
Totally.
We are all such nerds, by the way. It's amazing we did that in unison, by the way. You can sync to that.
Yeah, so we end up meeting Janusz. Who, did we hear from Janusz first in the Fraternity of the Stone? Or the Brotherhood of the Rose? One of those two books?
It was Brotherhood of the Rose.
You think so? Okay. I thought it was Fraternity, but I remember those being such great audiobooks.
Romulus and Remus were from Brotherhood of the Rose.
Yes. But Stuart Little was from the Fraternity of the Stone.
Yes.
Yeah. And then the League of Night and Fog. which I remember nothing about except it was two heroes come together.
One of my most cherished Christmas gifts.
Oh, excellent. I want to also revisit the Holcroft Covenant, because I think that was my first unabridged audiobook. Like, it was a Brilliance audiobook that you had like 5 or 10 cassettes, each of which you played twice. Because you had to like use an A-B splitter.
Channel one, channel two.
Had that splitter. Yeah, that was the first audiobook you ever had me listen to.
Yeah.
Got me hooked on those for a while.
It was great. Full cast recordings. Yeah. The best. So I'm almost tempted to get Holcroft Covenant again just to see if it lives up. The Michael Caine movie is not good. But, okay, back to, we get a little bit more Tiger Helicopter. What about this Three Stooges trying to have him get out of the helicopter before the Stinger missiles came back or whatever?
I loved it. It made no sense.
It seemed very Roger Moore.
Again, I think they were trying to find their way in this movie. They weren't quite sure where to go.
So we have the ejectocopter thing, which is kind of fun. And we have this sort of Natalia doesn't trust Bond, which is good because no one should trust James Bond, especially girlfriends, because they don't usually end up very well. But so she goes and tries to meet up with Boris, but then is captured. And let's see. There's that the scene in the archives where they eventually lead to the tank race or tank chasing the little car, which is ridiculous, but yeah, fun. What did you think, Jason? Do you like the tank?
Yeah. Plus you get to really see some of the sights.
Yeah. Then we have the Darth Vader tank or train, Darth Vader train, where he has to use his rich wristwatch. Sorry, it's hard to say his Irish wristwatch laser drill thing, laser cutter, torch. What do you call it?
I don't know. I was too distracted by the 1995 style computer hacking.
yes. Send a spike. Spike him.
SPIKE. Enter. Go.
Exactly. And what about all these secret passwords that Boris was using?
They're pretty lame.
Yep. But, you know, she has to go to that computer store and get those. She wants to order all those computers with 500 megabyte memory and CD-ROM drives.
14,400 speed modem. Sorry.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
That ain't no 2400 baud.
Exactly. You could probably download a photo in less than 30 minutes with that speed.
Maybe. But it would crash your graphics card, so. No, nobody wants to look at a half-pixelated vagina anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I don't know. At the time.
Yeah, you know, back then you didn't have very many options.
Exactly, yeah. So, they end up going...
Sorry, Mom.
They end up going to Cuba, who trades James Bond his car for a plane. And this is where, okay, so James Bond and Natalia get the plane, but then all of a sudden Bond is all, like, sulking by the beach? Does that seem like a weird left turn? Like, the movie had set me an expectation of, okay, tank, Darth Vader train, go to Cuba, get the plane, go right to action. But no, all of a sudden he's going to be on the beach. And then they're going to make some sort of crazy sweet, sweet love.
That part didn't make sense, but I thought Bond is kind of moody and brooding throughout the whole movie.
Yeah, I'm interested to see the next one to see if he's so moody.
Yeah, I don't remember him being being this way. Although I do remember one of them starts out with him being captured and tortured by the North Koreans.
Oh, excellent.
So,
yeah, that's the one with Halle Berry, I believe.
Jinx. Yeah. Wasn't she going to have her own movie?
Yeah.
Halle Berry and Madonna, right?
Was that Madonna, too?
I think so. Die Another Day?
Yeah, and so then we see kind of like, what was it, Dr. No? That had the like the volcanic lake hiding.
Oh no, that was
Goldfinger. Maybe
You Only Live Twice.
Oh, okay. He's getting all messed up, but
because he infiltrated it dressed as a Japanese dude.
Yes, that's true. Yes, yes. He was a 6'2" Scottish guy with the Spock haircut, hunched over, fit right in. So yeah, so they find this gigantic satellite station, and we get this thing where I guess what there's just a short window to talk to the satellite as it cruises overhead, which is why it seemed like for a second they were trying to aim the satellite toward London. I mean, I'm sorry. Yep. They were trying to aim the dish toward London. It's like, no, you only need to hit the satellite, right? I mean, maybe I don't know how these things work, but
blah blah blah, bad guy laser.
Exactly. But we had some pretty fun, like ending gigantic set piece, thrilling adventures. We had Boris. We had. That some sort of like hydraulic fluid or something, or secret bad guy juice. We had okay. The most absurd thing was, of course, the pen.
I love the pen.
Well, first of all, when we saw Q, I think for the last time, I love Q's cast on his leg. I thought, yeah. That is the ultimate in Q type stuff. I love the scenes of Q where he is like trying gadgets that don't work and blowing shit up in usually like a historic landmark. But in this case, probably just in an office someplace.
His don't touch that, that's my lunch. Is that a running joke?
I don't know.
They've done that one before, right?
I think so. It seemed like maybe Desmond Llewellyn was phoning it in his queue, but it still, it was fine.
Well, he was exhausted after that huge part.
Oh, that's true in the last movie, yeah. So, yeah, so we get to the pen scene where, and okay, another thing that irritated me, again, this is just really tiny quibbles, but Alan Cummings didn't do enough interesting things with that pen in the beginning with it. Like, I'm like, he's just fumbling trying to make this pen spin in his fingers. He's not doing, like, a magic juggling trick or some sort of crazy sleight of hand thing. He is doing what any of us could do with no practice.
So you're saying he should have had, like, some scarves?
No, I'm saying he should be able to be a little more deft at it.
That might be my favorite thing ever.
Anyway,
you went right with the condescension on 100. You went right to scarves.
It's like what, the ultimate juggling disc? Is that what you're saying?
Yep.
Hey now, I think I still have scarves.
I'm sure you do.
Yeah, I saw Peter Scolari on Circus of the Stars juggling scarves.
That sounds like a tongue twister.
It's a thrill a minute. Be like Tom Poston with the cigar box tricks.
It's like you had it on the tip of your tongue to pull out the one thing that would really like scar the soul of a juggler.
I had no idea.
Well, you think he should have scarves?
I can't believe
you had that loaded and ready to go.
I had no idea it would strike such a nerve. Being not of the jugglers brood, I had no idea of the sensitivity. So my apologies for the disproportionate scarf hatred.
I love it.
It's going to go in the notes, people. Yeah, so we have hand-to-hand battles. We've got more falling. A lot of falling in this movie. Oh, we have. What do you think of Xenia's final demise?
It was kind of awful.
It was.
But fitting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Boris doesn't eat it very pleasantly either.
Oh, Boris was hilarious though. Everybody wanted Boris to die.
Didn't he look? He looked briefly like Harry Potter when he was frozen.
Yes, yes. I am invincible.
I repeat that line constantly, and no one ever gets it. So now the two of you will get it.
Yeah. How about James Bond cold-bloodedly killing 006?
Yeah, well, this is a get it right the second time.
No, you're not fucking around.
Very reminiscent. That whole fight, end of the fight, was like Empire Strikes Back, Beneath Cloud City.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, that's what I thought of instantly. Yes, I was waiting for one of them to say that the other one was their father and then cut off their hands. But
it's actually the other way around.
Anyway. Oh, I'm sorry, spoiler. Oh yeah, but you know, Bond didn't actually kill him by dropping him from the
yeah, he didn't die.
Receiver. He just fucked him up real bad.
Yeah, those double O's are a hearty bunch.
Oh yeah. So we have Natalia forces the helicopter pilot to rescue James, and then they dump Natalia and James in an empty field where they're going to make sweet, sweet love yet again, except for Joe Don Baker and all the Marines.
As promised.
Yeah. Who, by the way, all the Marines could have been very helpful about 20 minutes
ago. Yeah, I was going to say, they just like... Nah, we're just going to see how bad they fuck things up, and then we'll clean it up after.
I think they're still trying to figure out the rules of engagement.
We didn't even talk about the porn music playing during the car chase in the very beginning of the movie. It was pretty bad. Yeah, all in all, golden.
We also didn't talk about the sort of forced conflict between the new M and Bond.
Yeah. So
drawing the line that he was old school, goes by his gut, and she was new school, computers and statistics and analysis. That never really went anywhere.
No.
But
she was tough as nails, but she knew he was a misogynist pig.
Yep.
And he would say, no, I'm not a misogynist pig, I'm a misanthropic pig. Marm. So, GoldenEye. Brother Jay, what's your verdict?
Good movie, good rewatch. It definitely stands up for the most part. A little dated in parts, but I give this a B. It's definitely a happy, fun Bond. Happy maybe not the right word, but it's definitely a fun Bond upon rewatch. So I would recommend it. If you're going to start out in the Brosnan Bonds, this is a great. If you're going to start out for the Bond films in general, it would still be a great start. So I recommend it.
Brother Drew, was it worth it?
Very much so. I love Brosnan as Bond in this movie. It makes me worry about the next movies coming up. But, I think this is my favorite Bond. This is my favorite version of Bond.
Well, we have three more. The next being, Tomorrow Never Dies, followed by The World Is Not Enough and Die Another Day.
All right.
So anything else on Bond before we move to housekeeping?
Nope.
Have you seen The November Man?
I have not.
I thought it was pretty good. Pierce Brosnan, kind of a, you know.
It's on my list. I just, you know.
Yeah, it's fun.
With everything else.
That's not the one with Greg Kinnear, is it?
Let me find out. It is not. No, Will Patton.
Oh, the Matador is what I'm thinking of.
Ah.
And I've talked about Seraphim Falls before, right?
I remember the name, but I don't remember anything about it.
It's a bonkers Western with Liam Neeson and Pierce Brosnan.
Oh, well, of course it is. Yeah. It sounds crazy. So, housekeeping?
You had a Sasquatch thing.
Oh, yeah, I had a couple things. But I wanted to give you guys an opportunity. Drew, do you have anything? Oh, sorry. Nope. Brother Jay?
Did you see my Facebook post about the Babadook?
Yes. The Babadook has become a new gay icon for no reason.
Oh, no, it's the greatest reason. But you'll have to share that article with Drew when you see him, because it is fantastic. Just everything about it makes me chuckle. But I've made it through another couple episodes of The Americans, Brother Drew, and this show is bonkers. There is so much straight-up murder and banana. So I'm enjoying it. Yay for that. So I still recommend The Americans.
And Frank Langella is amazing.
I was so shocked. He has a pretty big role. So
yeah, he is great.
And his presence, he's just always such a solid bastard when he plays, you know, when he plays the villain, he does such a great job. So
he's actually pretty good in everything.
He really is.
Yeah, and the only reason his character was even written into the show is because Margot Martindale, who was their handler in the first season, got a network sitcom.
Sweet. I mean, good for everybody, right?
Yeah.
Huh.
Did she still have that sitcom?
No.
Remember when Fairuza Balk was supposed to be the FBI agent in The Sopranos?
No.
She was in like the last episode of whatever that season was, when the Drea De Mateo character starts to flip. They actually reshot it and recast her for reasons we don't know. Like, but reshot the entire role with a different actress for the rest of
it. That's always a good sign.
Yeah, so something happened along there.
Yeah, that's like Witchblade when they just ended the series because Yancey Butler couldn't show up.
Yeah, well, that was a pretty serious problem. She was a main character. This at least was a side character.
She was the main character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was the titular witch.
I think Jennifer Ely was Catelyn Stark in the Game of Thrones pilot.
Oh.
And then they completely redid it and reshot all of her scenes.
Well, it happened. Val Kilmer and Tom Cruise will be in the new Top Gun movie.
Top Gun. I was at Costco tonight, by the way, and they have two Game of Thrones ales. So that's how you know it's coming to the end for them.
They're going to milk that show out through like 2020.
Nah, they're going to have like three spinoffs probably, so.
Why not? As long as people are enjoying it, right?
Nah, I haven't watched it since season three. I'm good.
I haven't watched it since the first episode of season two. I never got to see a full-grown dragon.
Ah, the baby dragons are adorable. I want a baby dragon. Anyway, never mind. Yeah.
One movie recommendation and one little slice of life you might appreciate. We saw Captain Underpants last weekend.
Oh, yeah?
And it was great. Saw it with actually Mom, Mother Anderson, and Journey and I. And Journey, who has been sick for like three solid weeks. We finally took her to a doctor yesterday, and she has a mystery virus. Nothing to see here. Move it along. $191.
We know about mystery viruses.
Yeah. But at least it wasn't pneumonia. We were worried about that because she's had a cough that has continued. But
it's my favorite. So virus. So they're not going to do anything, right?
Nope. Wow, your nose is super swollen from the inside. Yeah, well, it's a heck of a virus. But apparently this is going around and it lasts a long time and lots of people have had it. So
you really look like you're in distress. Off you go.
Yeah. They're like, you know, she kept saying like, well, I can't breathe. Like, well, that's probably one of those things you probably want to take someone to a doctor when they say they can't breathe. But
usually.
Oh, well. It's like, well, clearly you can breathe. You're talking to me. Talking is breathing. But, yeah, I didn't want to be that guy. So, but luckily she got a clean bill of health, sort of. $191. Our healthcare system is broken. The other thing
you pay for your office visits under your copay plan?
Oh yeah. Yep. And I mean, she gets, I think maybe a physical is free, but she, you know, she's, we've got a $500 deductible for her, so for everybody. So yeah. And our family deductible is like $2,000. And we pay $28,000 a year for the insurance. So, you know, it's a thing.
You pay $28,000?
Well, that's how much the city pays.
Oh.
Yeah.
That your share of that isn't...
My share of that is like $1,200 a year, probably.
Oh, all right. It's like you're paying $28,000 for health insurance.
No, but that's... Holy shit. I mean, somebody is paying $28,000.
No, I understand. I understand. I was just...
Hey, I'm waiting until they start taxing us on that. That would be a rude awakening for people. Or maybe just for me with the, you know, cushy city job or something. Government workers. And union members, the worst.
I'm a government worker. I get it. I understand.
Well, that's why we don't get paid as much.
Yes.
No bonuses, don't get paid as much. But we traded that for benefits, so... Okay, so two things. One story, but it kind of goes in hand in hand with Anthony Rotolo asked us about. He's hooked on the new podcast called The Sasquatch Chronicles. Sorry, it's not a new podcast. I think there's like 300 episodes, but it was new to him. And he asked us, since we live in Alaska, whether we have any. You know, he said, "Well, you probably can't keep Sasquatches out of your trash cans." So you must have great Sasquatch stories. I'm like, no, I got nothing. I always want to explain to people that I'm not a very good case for being an Alaskan. Like, I don't want to go camping. And I hear enough stories about bears, which are pretty dangerous sometimes, and moose, which are even more dangerous sometimes, and human monsters that I don't really worry about a random Squatch sighting here and there. But I asked you guys, and you guys, neither of you have Sasquatch tales, Bigfoot stories, creepy woods encounters that don't involve people.
Nope.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, my sole animal encounter stories is, you know, we came face to face with a baby bear, which scared the hell out of all of us because, you know, a baby bear, there's going to be mama bear, so... that's where we found out that the bear repellent really does work really well. And, we got chased by a hoary marmot at one point that was pissed off and loud and terrible. And then we had a porcupine that was, denning underneath one of the Park Service cabins because the cabins are built off the ground, avoid the permafrost layer. So there's this dead space underneath the cabin, and he'd apparently was denning in the underneath the cabin, and he'd been conditioned by all of the visitors to the cabin that when he knew there was people there, he would come up and just take food right away from you, just like snatch it out of your hand. So
well, what are you going to do? It's a porcupine. You let him do what he
needs
to do.
Yeah, no. You're like, dude, here, you can just have this. So,
and porcupines are surprisingly big.
Yeah, and they're actually surprisingly fast. They're faster than... I just have this concept of this lumbering little thing, but he scooted along the ground pretty damn quickly. So, also, they make weird noises. But anyway, that's really my wilderness... encounter. I mean, we had some mountain goats at Rabbit Lake, and I think they were confused by us in their area. So, but other than that, not a lot of wildlife encounters.
I've had far away encounters with bears. I've had close up encounters with fox. I've had really large wolves get closer and closer to my camp out on an Aleutian island. I did not like that. Had a caribou. Had an encounter with a caribou that was not pleasant. But no Sasquatch.
What made the caribou unpleasant?
I was by myself at the top of this mountain on Umnak Island, where there is an old White Alice station that we're working at. And so I had ridden up there on one of our four-wheelers. We had a water treatment system going up there, so I went up to check it. And I turned the corner to go back to my four-wheeler, and there was a caribou, like, right face-to-face with me. And if he had decided, if he had gotten spooked and decided to charge me, I would have been dead. So I slowly backed away and let him go on about his business. And he turned and walked down the hill and away. And similar to your baby bear, they usually travel in larger numbers than one. So only seeing one also freaked me out. But he hung out between me and my four-wheeler for a while.
And were you having a little conversation like, I can't believe this. Come on.
Yeah. I was like, I've been gone a while. How come nobody's coming up here and checking on me? It's kind of bullshit.
That's funny. Or, I mean, yeah, definitely. Anything with horns. You don't want to mess with anything with horns.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I don't really have any animal stories, but I was listening to the said Sasquatch Chronicles when I was walking for exercise last Sunday, and it was like evening. It was like 8:30 at night, probably. And I told you before, walking for exercise is not pleasant. I don't really enjoy it. But you know, it's a decent way to get exercise, but I have to do it outside. I can't just walk on a treadmill because otherwise 20 minutes in, I am going to bail because it's not fun, but that's okay. So I was feeling particularly sorry for myself. The shoes I was wearing weren't the greatest. So, and I had a big blister from before, but anyway, blah, blah, blah. There's 8 million reasons why I was feeling sorry for myself. Wasn't going as fast as I wanted to. And, yet I was feeling fairly defeated, but I reached a point where I was like a mile and a half into the walk. And normally at this point, I would just like make the U-turn and go right back and I'd get 3 miles out of it and call it a day. And I was about to do that, probably like head down, feeling pretty low. And then out from the woods, literally the woods, as I'm listening to this Sasquatch podcast, comes a bunch of like runners. And most of them, let's see, the guys were probably half and half like shirtless. They're all wearing the same color of shirts or shorts or whatever, so they're on some sort of club. But there were a couple of women and a couple of men up front who were shirtless, and the women had shirts on, but the men didn't. And it would seem like they were in pairs. Like, one was running behind the other one with a whistle, like blowing the whistle every so often. But what made me smile and pick up my pace a little bit and lift my head and smile was the fact that all of a sudden, after the first couple pairs, there was like a big old group of like 6 or 8 other guys that came out of the woods, all wearing utility kilts. So I was like, wow, this is a strange, strange thing. So I'm like, okay, well, that's cool. You know, I'm feeling fine now. You know, like I said, after the first mile, it's easier. So I'm like, okay. So instead of just flipping around, I will actually turn south and take the longer route.
Were you worried that your brain was eating itself out of some kind of oxygen debt?
No. I just thought it was just a fun experience. So, and you know, I should have been listening to music. Music will make my pace better. Will give me, you know, it's more of a thing. But instead, I was listening to stories about dog men and Sasquatch.
Yeah, I find when I'm walking, it has to be music. Otherwise, I get distracted and slow down. Yeah. With music, I can keep myself motivated.
Yeah. I think in a little bit of distraction. Like I said, it doesn't take long for me to feel all sorry for myself because I'm not going very fast and I feel very lumberly lumberingly. I don't know. I feel like a big old tank. So, but that's okay. As a man of circumference, I'm working on it. So that's why I'm there. Again, it's not for fun, people. This is for work. So I turn south and I start a longer loop that's going to result in like a 4.5 mile walk. And I get around, make another corner, mostly by myself. I mean, there's people here and there, and there's lots of mosquitoes, but no Sasquatches, even though there's woods all around. And I make another turn, and now I am like 3.5 miles into a 4.5 mile walk, headed on the way home. And I'm walking along Lake Otis Parkway, which is, you know, a like 2-lane each way road, fairly well traveled. And I am walking probably again a little bit head down at this point because I'm on the way home and I'm just moving forward. That's all I want to do is keep moving forward. And some jack wagon in a big old pickup truck drives by and calls me a fat fuck. Yeah. And that made me smile. Like, I lifted my head up and I smiled the biggest grin I have in a very long time. Because this, my friends, was completely out of nowhere. Like, I didn't do anything to anybody. I'm on a bike path. I'm not even like walking on a sidewalk right next to the road. I'm like a little bit off the road. So, wow. And I mean, don't get me wrong. I smiled out loud and I thought it was hilarious because, you know, there's no, what am I going to do? I'm not going to fight some guy. Even if his car stopped at the next light, I'm not going to be able to run up and get to him because I'm not in running shape, especially after 3.5 miles. But I did wish him throat cancer. But, you know, I just thought, wow. So, yeah. And so at the end of the walk, it was great. I got my almost 5 miles in. Got my steps for the day, just plenty. But yeah, people are the worst.
That reminds me of a, if I may piggyback.
Yes.
When I was going to school in Missouri, in my nuclear engineering classes, we had two girls out of like nine total students in that program, which was a really high percentage for overall for the university I went to. And one of them was part of like a cross country running club at the school. And I was working with her on a project, and she was telling me about how she wanted to go get some miles in, but none of the other members of her club were available, and she wasn't going to go out running alone, which I thought to be a curious statement. And so I asked her why she wouldn't go running alone, because it's not like it's like super dark out and it's a small town, hardly any crime. And she just kind of blew my mind because she told me about how even when they run in groups, they get constant, it's all girls, they would get constantly harassed and catcalled and yelled, have names yelled at them. And I could not process as like, why? Like, she's like, oh yeah, people just, they'll drive by and just scream dirty whore as they're running.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, why? I mean, that made even less sense to me than the guys who will honk whenever they like see a girl. But yeah, so yeah, your story just reminds me of that. I was like, I was so dumbfounded. And she was, the sad part was, it was just like so matter of fact for her. Like, she just like rattled off like all the horrible things that she'd heard. And this is a small town. This is like, if you see somebody yelling something from you from their car on the road, you will run into that person at Walmart.
Well, and that's the thing. It's like, what is to be gained by this? I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. It was, like I said, it was just so absurd. And because it wasn't like threatening, like I didn't feel threatened by it. I just felt like, well, that was a little rude. I mean, not altogether untrue, but still kind of, you know, there's no need for this.
It's rather uncalled for.
Yeah, exactly. Although I do remember, you reminded me just now of when I went to Mexico, and this is like in 88, 89 maybe, and for longer story, but we ended up getting separated between, I was traveling with a family, and the mom and dad of the family, who are my age, had to like stay at the city that we had arrived in to deal with a passport issue. So me and the little kids met up with other
their family. They're from, originally from Mexico.
Yeah, they're from Mexico, yeah. And so there was an issue with passports and stuff, which would have made it very difficult for them to get back in the United States had they not figured out a way to solve the problem. And it was a very, very long, circuitous method of solving the problem we eventually did. And there was anguish and tears. Although, not for me, because I had my passport just fine, but and I was American.
You're just a privileged white American,
basically. But so we are in Guadalajara, and we have my friend's husband's brother picks us up, and my friend's brother. So we got two like uncles of the little girls, who are going to drive us to Morelia or wherever. Anyway, to someplace. Couple hours away. Oh, so we get in this big Suburban with no seatbelts, and I get to go on and on about how this this car trip was going to go, but the very first thing, even before we really got off of airport grounds, was these two girls were walking along the side of the road, and they stopped the car to start screaming at them in Spanish, and I turned to one of the guys, I'm like what's going on? Like, oh, don't worry about it. What are you say? I mean, you know, I couldn't figure out, and there was nothing to be gained by it either. It was like, you know, it was like catcalling, but it's not like anybody was benefiting from that exchange. I mean, I guess if the girls felt flattered, that was a good thing, I suppose, but it's like, why are you stopping and honking and screaming at these people you don't know? Like, move, 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 people. Keep it moving. But yeah, that was the least of our problems, as it turns out, on that trip. That was also where I learned that sometimes you just have to give up all responsibility for your own safety if you're aboard a conveyance that somebody else is driving. Like, you know, plane, I don't really care about planes. You know, well, we'll see about little planes, but, you know, about big planes, yeah, not too worried about it. I figure if I die, I die. Same thing sometimes when you get into a car with somebody. Like, well, there's no seatbelts. Doesn't matter. Ice.
That's ice. The spirit.
Yeah, we nearly hit a horse. I have never seen so many roadkill dogs.
Yeah, I had a buddy in college who would just honk. If he saw a girl he liked, he'd honk while we were driving around. He'd be in mid-sentence and he'd stop to honk. And, yeah, when I asked him why, he genuinely considered it a compliment.
Oh.
Well, I'm not sure that's how the young ladies took it, but
yeah, that's the thing. You wonder.
That's the male brain, the Cro-Magnon stupid hormonal male brain who thinks that every woman wants to get a picture texted to them of their junk.
Yeah, I guess I would have been more shocked if I'd been walking along and got a text message of somebody's junk as I was doing my not happy about it exercise. So that's my housekeeping. Thank you for GoldenEye, Nick.
Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on our new voicemail account to leave voice messages, or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts. Dial it already.